Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, is Tell Del Tuesday, and I have a guest today that is an amazing story. And in addition to that, his story led to him being so successful. Sorry, they worked earlier today. And that I went ahead and asked him to be one of our mentors, and he agreed, and he is one of our multifamily mentors. So let's go ahead and introduce today Jeff Ziegler out of San Antonio.
You know, it's the first of the month. I'm always looking at delinquency right now. So it's, you know, you're not supposed to look at it before the 10th of the month. And that's always one of those things that kind of wakes you up when you look at how many people haven't paid their rent by the second.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that in the apartment business. When I had the single family houses, everybody paid by the first of the month because the way it was set up back then, and I was really tough on it, was it was, you know, due on the first and late by the third. And if you didn't pay by the third, you were getting a late fee charge of like $100 plus an eviction notice. You've got 10 right. days to pay or you're out. I didn't even mess around. Now, when I got to the apartment business, they go, Del, are you insane? You'd be evicting 50% of everybody in your group. You're lucky if 80 or 90% pay by the 10th when it's due, you know? And I go, oh, yep. Different world. Okay. So,
it's
yeah,
a
you don't need
world,
to.
For sure.
Don't lose sleep over that, Jeff. You had
not
single family houses. You know, there's a difference.
Right? Yes, sir.
So let's go way back, Jeff. And, you know, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Let's talk about life of quiet desperation. 50, 60 hours a week working, both you and the wife? Is that what I read?
Yeah, we worked for the same company. We worked in construction wholesale. And at the time, you know, the expectation was 7:30 to 5:30. And, you know, we didn't mind doing that before we had kids. But you have kids and priorities change. And it became something that was more of a roadblock for family time than anything. And yeah, that was an eye-opening experience. Your life changes in many, many ways when you have kids. And then all of a sudden you realize, you know, it's not all about being at the office selling as much as you can. You get these little human beings that you want to spend a little bit of time with.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because as I listened to you tell that story, I went through the 60, 80 hour week sentence, you know, it's like a prison sentence, never saw the daylight. And, but I didn't have any kids. And as you were saying that right now, I'm thinking about my life going, okay, I get up in the morning, got to spend an hour with my dogs. And, you know, dogs aren't kids, but they have the same needs, right? And then I got to take care of my pond and make sure my fish get fed and the filters get changed and clean my pool. And just, I thought, man, where is life? When I worked those hours, I had no life. I remember I'd work, 9 to 9 was my hours, believe it or not, Monday through Friday. And if we didn't hit our sales quota, and there's sales again, right? Then we had to work Saturday. And man, that was brutal. You come home, you wake up Sunday morning, go, I got to do my laundry, I got to go to the grocery store, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You barely could get anything done during that one day a week off. There's definitely no life at the end of that tunnel. That's why I'm so adamant about it. It's not the money, it's the lifestyle. So how long did you do that before you decided to look into something, and what brought you to us?
Well, we were doing that for probably, at the time, Carla, my wife, had been doing it since 2002, so till 2015 when you found you. So that's 13 years, and I'm a couple years younger than her, so I was probably about 10 years into it. And, you know, our life was get up, go to work, we'd break, go to the gym, work out, and then we'd go grab dinner and go back to the office and work until, you know, 7 or 8 at night, and then go home. And there was a guy that we met at our gym that was posting all over Facebook about buying houses and renovating houses and renting them. And, you know, I finally approached him and asked him because, you know, we've always been interested in real estate. So, hey, I said, what are you doing? This is something, you know, we might want to do. We didn't have any debt other than our house and our vehicles. And you know, we'd been investing in mutual funds. But you sit there and watch the mutual fund account and poke it with a stick and tell it to do something, and it doesn't really do much. And so we started talking to Chris, and he told us about lifestyles and started using terms like ARV and hard money and LTV and CMA and all these things. And so he said, stop, just come to a case study. You'll learn about it. We'll teach you. And so that was the beginning of it. We went to a case study in October and November of 2015 and joined up in November of 2015, I believe is when it was. And then it was off to the races from there.
When you came in, what grabbed your attention first? I assume you went to a case study, so that's what you said. What grabbed your attention? What was eye-opening for you?
Well, I mean, it was. I went in skeptical, and honestly, both my wife and I did, and we weren't real excited about giving up a weekend to go to the 2-day. But at the case study, you know, I approached both of the presenters. We do a single family and a multifamily presenter. And I walked up to both of them afterwards and started grilling them, and realized very quickly that they were just real people, just like me, that just made a decision to do something different. And it became very apparent very quickly that if you just apply the knowledge that you're given through the program, that you can become successful. You really can become real estate retired. And so that was, for me, that was the catalyst. My wife still wasn't 100% convinced. She wasn't really excited about getting up early on a Saturday morning and going into the 2-day. But, you know, it was interesting. During that 2-day, there was a paradigm shift. I just went to learn how to buy a couple of houses. That's all I wanted to do, just buy a couple of single-family homes that were going to supplement the income, pay for the vacations, that type of stuff. And when they started talking multifamily at the end of the second day, now I had to slow Carla down and say, wait. That's not what we came to learn about. We just came to, it was so far-fetched, the idea of owning apartments, I couldn't even wrap my head around it.
Wow, that's amazing. And a couple of skeptics, too. You know, it's always fun to watch the skeptics fall.
We sat right in the front row and soaked it all up, you know, trying to take a sip of water from a fire hose over a weekend. But we had to come back a couple more times before we decided apartments was the path for us.
You did 12 single family houses over what period of time, and then what changed your mind that you wanted to look into apartments? Where did that happen, and why, and how did that happen?
The last single family house we bought was actually in 2020 during COVID, because we needed something to keep ourselves and our kids busy, honestly. But our first apartment community that we purchased was in 2018 as a lead with our partners. But we decided after getting into the apartments and learning the apartment business, it was time to start divesting the houses. We owned, when we bought the first apartment community with our partners in 2018, I think we still had 7 houses. So we started divesting in the houses once we understood what it was to have the ability to have staff, right? You have a manager, you have a maintenance guy, at least part-time, to be able to take care of the business for you. And then all of a sudden, kind of makes you a little bit lazy. You don't want to deal with the leases. You don't want to deal with the maintenance and the work orders on the single family houses. And so it just became an idea of scale. And the houses were spread out all over San Antonio, so all the way from one side to the other. And just trying to make things more efficient for my time.
So let me ask you a question that I'm going to just sort of stick back in here in between moving from single family to multifamily. And that is, as a mentor, as a person that went through it completely, you went single family. You also did passive deals. I don't know where that fit in, so you can kind of explain how you decided that you wanted to do a little single, a little passive, and then eventually be a lead, you know, doing a little bit of everything. But my question is, if as a mentor you're looking back on this and you were to take your best friend and say, based on your skill set, based on who you are, how would I best mentor you to move? Should you go to single family and then buy your first multifamily deal? Or should you go passive and then buy your first multifamily deal? Single family to passive really has nothing, no benefit there at all, I can see.
Right.
But just, you know, do you think you need the experience of renting a house and talking to a tenant, or you know, blah, blah, blah. Or do you need the experience of being a part of one of these deals and watching the whole deal get firmed up, watching the deal get turned around and so forth? Which path do you think is a mentor? And how often do you direct people? And is there a direction because of the personality also?
The first question I ask when people, you know, they come to you, and as a mentor, the new member will come to you and go, what do you think I should do? Well, let's have a conversation. How much time do you have to commit to this? Because if you're going to buy a single family house, there's one person that shoulders all the responsibility there, and that's you, right? You're not necessarily swinging the hammer and doing the work, but you have to manage the contractors. You have to be there to rent the property, you know, if you're going to run it as an independent rental owner versus giving it to a management company. So there's a lot of hands-on, right? You're the one that's running the application. You're the one that's creating the lease, the whole nine yards. So that on single family. On multifamily, if you have the scale to be able to buy something that can afford staff, so 50 units and above, generally, then, you know, it's how much time do you have to commit to managing your manager, things like that. If you're going to buy less than that, it's very hands-on. It's very management intensive because you become the person that fields the phone calls. You become the person that fields the leases and all of that. So it's really, it comes down to how much time do you have to be hands-on in your business or not? And what's your skill set behind that? Have you ever managed people? Have you ever worked in a customer-facing job, right? Versus sitting behind a desk working on spreadsheets all day. You have to know how to communicate to people. You have to know how to sell, you know, if you're leasing apartments, that type of stuff. So it's more about what's your background and how much time do you have to commit to actually running the business. Those are the initial conversations that we have.
Do you think it's important that, you know, whatever your diverse skill set might be, that you do a passive deal before you do one as a lead, just so you see how the whole process works?
You know, when I was a passive, the reason we became passive is because we were still working full time. And that was why we invested passively initially, kind of sandwiched between single family and multifamily for us. But watching the deal happen, that was my catalyst going, I could do this. So, you know, it's a little bit of an insight, but as a passive, you don't really get that involved. Generally, you're just getting reports on a monthly basis and making sure that you try to hold your lead accountable for the business plan that they presented to you when you invested in the deal. I wouldn't necessarily say that being a passive is training wheels to a lead. If you think you want to be a lead, but you're not ready yet, I would say go buy and renovate a house and lease it out. And that'll be, for me at least, that'll be a little bit more more aligned with what it is to be a lead on a smaller community to start with.
All right. So the single family is a better precursor just to get your hands, because you're actually doing this stuff. You're watching it happen.
In my opinion, it is, yes.
Yeah. Well, I understand that's how I started with single family, so I agree with that. To be honest, because a lot of passives don't understand how much work there is to be a lead in one of these deals.
Right.
And so they don't come into it from the point of view that, hey, I've decided, I've put together passive income, I could retire, but I've decided I'm going to quit my job and go to work in another business. And
right.
I don't think we get that point across well enough, and I'm just going to make that point. Hey, if you're going to go take one of these deals on as a lead investor, You're starting a business, and you've got employees, you've got staff, you've got investors, you've got customers. I mean, this is a business, and it's going to take some of your time, more time than it would be to be a passive, definitely on that type of a deal.
Yeah, it does. It takes commitment for sure.
All right, there's the music. Sounds like we need to take a break. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Lifestyles Unlimited member Lisa on how our educators and mentors share their knowledge.
The whole Lifestyles Unlimited team is just wonderful, and all the people in it is basically copying what I do so you could be successful.
Lifestyles Unlimited. Over 33 years teaching the real estate retirement roadmap. Go to GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Enter code 2024. Join the Financial Freedom Program for just $297 for 2 years. That's GiveMeTotalFreedom.com, code 2024.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me today on Tell Del Tuesday is Jeff Ziegler out of San Antonio, who is also both a lead investor, passive investor, single family investor, and now a mentor out of San Antonio. So, Jeff, as we work our way through this process here of explaining all this stuff, as a mentor, as you took and start teaching people this, you've already just had the discussion with them about what they're going to do. So when they start doing the deal, what is your first bit of advice to them about getting their first deal? Can you share what that might be? How do you get them started?
First, honestly, I think it's the same across the board, whether they're buying a deal or whether they're being a passive. You've got to come up with what your investment criteria is. What do you want your money to do for you? Are you going to go buy a deal that has limited cash flow but has a really big value add component to it? Or are you looking for something that's going to generate cash flow to replace an income or to supplement an income that is more of a yield type deal? Without an investment goal, without a plan, you're just kind of taking a shotgun approach and you can get distracted by shiny objects. So first thing is list out your investment criteria. And then once you have that, that's when we figure out what kind of deal is going to work for you.
So my approach is to get them to start going after deals, even if they can't make that deal happen. Just the process. I was talking to a girl last night. I said, look, whether we do this deal or we don't do this deal, the process is all in the education, because we're an education and mentoring program. I want people to come away from the experience knowing how to make the decisions. Much as yes or no, we should make that decision. So I'm assuming that you do the same thing.
Yeah, working on the underwriting and understand the P&L and that type of stuff. Absolutely, I think that's paramount too.
All right, how do you explain to them starting to raise a group of people that they would have it willing and interested in investing with them? Do you have a process for that? Do you have them start that right away or not?
No, I think that's something you start the moment you complete the lead certification. So as soon as you're done with the training, you know, step one is introduce yourself to as many people inside Lifestyles as you possibly can if you haven't already started that. And then you begin building a network of realtors and lenders. You know, Lifestyles does a great job with our vendor list. We've got a ton of lenders that are out there with money that are willing to help us get started. And we've got built in realty in I don't know how many cities across the nation that you're in now with the realty companies. So that's the easy part. You know, you've got it, but the work is getting to the events, getting to the networking events and introducing yourself and showing up at case studies, showing up at road trips, that type of stuff, and making yourself known. So, get in front of as many people as you possibly can. And that also helps you understand what kind of deals people are looking to invest in, because you have a conversation with them about what their goals are and what their expectations for a multifamily investment are, and helps you start understanding what people are looking for in the marketplace.
So your first deal was 48 units. How long did it take you to raise the capital? How much capital did you have to raise to do that deal?
We raised a little bit over $1 million because it was a really big rehab deal. That took about 4 or 5 days to raise back in 2018. So that was phone calls and emails. That was the old school way of doing it.
The old school. All right. So what is the largest raise you've seen since you've been at Lifestyles? Just out of curiosity,
the largest raise that I've seen was, I want to say it was around $20 million. It was a newer build property that was done, I think, up in the DFW area.
Yeah,
it was about $20 million or so.
I saw two or three deals that size go down at the same time, and they raised the money. And again, the same thing you did, 4 or 5 days. It's just amazing that there's, you know, that much process, which is going to lead me to the next question. You've got a deal. You bought a deal in 2018, one in 2021, one in 2022, one in 2023, and we're in 2024, and you got one closing here near in the near future. You've been very consistent, looks like nailing one a year, it looks like here, for the last four or 5 years. So we went through COVID during that time. We went through prices being too high during that time. We went through interest rates going up and adjustable rate mortgages getting their behind kicked during this time. I mean, there's been all kinds of stuff, yet you've been very consistent to be able to keep pushing deals through. How did you do that, and why do you think your approach was so effective compared to other people that ran into one problem or another?
Well, we stayed very disciplined to our underwriting. We didn't go chase deals that we had to get creative to make work. The second deal that we bought in 2021, we were originally going to buy it in 2020, but with COVID shut down, the seller actually walked away from the market. They said, no, we don't know what's going on with everything right now. We're just going to hold. So a year later, that deal came back to us, and it was actually $1 million less than what they were going to sell it to us for in 2020. So, the metrics were still there. Everything was still good. We just had a little bit more rehab because it was a year more worth of deferred maintenance that they didn't do anything on the property.
Is this the 92 unit you're talking about?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Okay. In San Antonio. Yeah. That one was a value add to begin with. And then it was more of a value add a year later because they didn't spend any money on it at all. And just the deferred maintenance continued to stack up. But our metrics, we shifted in from 2021 to 2022, we shifted to from value add to yield play ideas because the idea of getting my wife out of her corporate job was now the goal, right? I walked away from my job in 2020 in the middle of COVID, and that's when we went full bore into real estate 100%, and then Carla, she said, okay, now you're out. Now it's my turn. So we started buying things that would replace income. And we came up with a investment criteria that we were going to live and die by. And if the deal didn't meet those metrics, thanks for sending it to me, but that's not the right one for us. So we just stayed very disciplined in our underwriting.
Two things I see in looking at your portfolio here that interest me. One is that everything's in two cities, or at least maybe
four
it's three
of the
cities.
Properties are going to be in two cities, yep.
Yeah. So that specialization in a market that you understand is something I want you to talk about. And secondly, if you do specialize like that, then people come to you and go, hey, why don't you pick this one up? It's within your zone, you know, that you're working. I noticed that the story you just shared about buying it $1 million below what it was listed at, that has popped up in your portfolio a couple times. Are you doing what I do, which is just sit back and wait for people to bring stuff that makes sense? And if that doesn't, I say no, and then they come back to me later when it finally does? Or are you doing the same plan?
Yeah, the first thing that the brokers ask you when you close on a deal is, when's your next one and where do you want to buy, right? Because they're looking for the next sale. And you always target a couple items. You don't necessarily require, you know, I'm not compelled to transact, but to your question about specialization, I'm staying out of the major markets. So the two properties that we own in Hondo, Texas, that's an hour west of San Antonio. It's a smaller town, you know, 15, 20,000 people. We basically own all of the market rate units in that town. And, it allows us to set the market rate. It allows us to know what's going on. And we've been in that market since 2016 or 2017. And so, you know, we know that market really, really well. I grew up 20 minutes from there. We're starting to see some cracks in the system in San Antonio where I think some of the people that were holding on for better interest rates and hoping for lower rates, which obviously haven't come and doesn't look like they're going to, they're now realizing that they're up against a maturity and they're up against a cash flow issue that they've got to sell. and where they were floating them out in the market a year ago at prices that didn't underwrite. Now, you know, all of a sudden they're coming they're coming back to the market with more realistic prices for the current market conditions. So yeah, we're starting to see some stuff break loose and start to trade.
Yesterday alone, I underwrote two deals that were so good that I would have jumped on them in a second if they were not somebody I was mentoring the deal on. But here you got to hear this stuff. We're talking 8 cap rates, man. I mean, whew, this stuff was selling for 4 cap rates a year ago.
Yeah, the deal that we've got is a 7.5 cap on a 2010 build. So, the prices are coming down.
Yeah, that's where the stuff starts getting fun again, because now if you buy at the right price, then when you put in all the work and the effort and so forth, you get to the other side. The profits there, the massive profits there. In other words, when you pay too much, you go in and do all the work, you get to the other side, and you go, well, you just gave all that profit to the guy you bought it from. But if you get it for the right price and you put all that work in, then you're value can double. I mean, your investment can double. If the value of the property goes up 10% and you're at a 25% investment rate and you get 25% down, that means your money doubles. It's called the Irv Triangle. It's an amazing set of numbers once you learn them, how easy it is to double your money in multifamily. Let's go into one last segment here. One more question, and then I'll hit you up with something else. That is this. I see here a note that you had run into an adjustable rate mortgage glitch. You got caught in that twist, and how did you get out of that?
Well, we bought a property, that 92 unit that we were talking about, that we had to wait a year to be able to buy it. We bought it with a bridge loan that was adjustable, and it needed a bridge loan. I mean, it didn't qualify for anything other than that at the time. And, we got it, we renovated it, and as we were starting to position the property to refinance it into permanent debt, that's when interest rates started to run. And, man, it was an interesting time. I wasn't sleeping much because, you know, you just kept seeing your payment go up a little more, a little more, a little more every month, every time the rates adjusted up. And we were able to get that refinance executed in March of 23 and get that into good, you know, a 10-year fixed rate debt. But it was definitely challenging. It was a little bit of operations and a whole lot of luck getting the loan that we did. We just happened to be able to catch some lightning in a bottle that day. But you've got to have the property positioned right so that it qualifies for the debt you're chasing, and then you just have to pay attention to the market and pull the trigger at the right time. So
at least you were smart enough to do it when you still could do it before the interest rates got so high that the thing wouldn't work. So right. Now that we can buy these properties 40% below, are you starting to see a pickup of volume of deals that are being chased now?
Yeah, after we get off the phone today, I've got 2 or 3 calls lined up with first-time leads that have deals that they're really excited about. So we're definitely starting to see some offers come across the desk where it's been slim pickings for, you know, the last few months for sure.
Gotcha. Well, the last thing I was going to ask you here and share with you real quick, we only have, I think, a minute and a half here. Let me see for sure. Don't want to run you out the back of the show. Yeah, we have a minute and a half, so let's give this question 30 seconds and we'll get out the back. That is, I consulted a person yesterday who the deal was incredible, real numbers. But this deal was 3 hours away from their home, first-time deal. Would you consult them to take that shot or not? Is that too much of a bite for the first deal?
The first deal I bought was an hour away from my house. Some people told me that was too far. It would just go down to the time commitment. You know, that's a conversation, you know, back to the beginning. How much time do you have to put into operating this and being on site during that time? So, you know, that's a question they'd have to answer. Can you commit to driving 3 hours, you know, in the middle of the night when you got an issue that has to be taken care of? So I would, I mean, if the deal hit all the other metrics, I would say go for it as long as they're willing to make that time commitment.
All right. Well, we don't have any more time to commit, so we're going to have to take thanks for coming on, Jeff. We appreciate it. And the rest of you out there, remember, this is not the money. It's the lifestyle. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.